Hello, and welcome to the November edition of the Angus Talking Newspaper. My name is Stacy, and I'm delighted to bring you the latest local news and stories read by our team of volunteers. In this month's recording, you'll hear Jenny with the news from October 23rd, Muriel with the edition from the 30th of October, and Irene bringing you the news from the 6th of November. We've also got a recording from TNF Soundings, which is around the Peak District and traveling there via audio. We hope you enjoy catching up with what's been happening across Angus, and as always, we thank you for listening and being a part of our community. Now, let's begin with Jenny and the news from the 23rd of October.
Hi, this is Jenny McGlynn reading from Angus County Press, Thursday, October the 23rd. 2025. The front page shows a picture of the Hapus Canine Centre, and the headline is Criticism of Dog Kennels. An Angus kennel has been criticised by inspectors as a charity makes another attempt to secure a licence for Scotland's first XL Bully Sanctuary. The All Bully Rescue Charity has made a third attempt to secure permission for the sanctuary to open at Hapus Canine Centre near Forfar. The charity is led by Kerry Ann Shaw, who moved to Angus from Glasgow in 2024 to set up the facility. There are currently 25 bull-type breeds at the kennels, including 6 XLs. Angus councillors rejected the charity's application for an animal welfare licence in February after members of the Civic Licensing Committee expressed grave concern about the operation of the facility. The organisation was due to contest the licence refusal at Forfar Sheriff Court in August. However, their appeal was withdrawn to allow for a new licence application to be submitted to the local authority. Now, a fresh report carried out by Angus Council's Animal Welfare Inspector has again recommended the charity should not be granted a licence. Several aspects of the submission to licensing came in for criticism. Policy and procedure material submitted in the licence application was also slammed as haphazard. The report was, however, positive about the care the animals already received in the facilities. It states that all animals seem in good health and appear in good weight and condition. The application will be considered by elected members at a meeting of Angus Council's Civic Licensing Committee next week. Under a photo of a wind turbine, there is the wind farm report. New information relating to a major offshore wind farm development has been made available in Carnoustie as part of a bid to obtain consent for the proposal. The additional environmental information that has been submitted by Ossian Offshore Wind Farm in support of the original RA consent application that was made to Scottish ministers in June last year. If approved for delivery, it would have an installed renewable capacity of up to 3.6 gigawatts, enough to be capable of powering up to 6 million homes annually when completed. The project has consulted widely, including with regulatory and industry bodies across nature conservation, fisheries, aviation, and shipping and navigation, to ensure the application is reflective of their views. Through this process, key consultees have requested additional environmental information covering ornithology and physical processes. Delivery of the project will be subject to securing planning consent, route to market, and a final investment decision by the joint venture partners. New store set to open its doors. There is a photograph of Home Bargains and Abbeygate Centre. Discount retailer Home Bargains is set to open its second shop this weekend, having invested about £10 million in the new facility. Arbroath 2, located on Dundee Road Retail Park, will be officially opened at 8 a.m. on Saturday, October 25th. As one of the UK's largest family-run retailers, the company is creating 50 new jobs with the new store, with 35 of these being new hires. The new store will complement the existing Arbroath shop in Abbeygate Shopping Centre and over 600 outlets across the UK. The store will offer shoppers a range of products including homewares, health and beauty essentials, sweets, snacks and drinks, as well as fresh and frozen food. The Arbroath 2 store will also be home to a Home Bargains bakery and garden centre. £400,000 allocated for bus service upgrades. More than £400,000 will go towards improving access to public bus services in Angus. It was confirmed at Angus Council's Policy and Resources Grants Subcommittee this week. The committee noted the award of £191,000 to replace bus shelters across Montrose. It also approved the acceptance of a further £212,550, which arises from a bid by the Tayside Bus Alliance. The work will contribute towards the council's aim to improve travel links in and around Angus. All of the funding is from Transport Scotland's Bus Infrastructure Fund, the Scottish Government's primary fund for the development, design and construction of bus infrastructure. It aims to deliver improvements to services that contribute to national priorities of eradicating child poverty, growing the economy, tackling climate emergency and improving public services. Many bus shelters in Montrose are in poor condition and money is being directed there, as it is felt it will make the greatest difference. Funding for the Tayside Bus Alliance will see a series of upgrades on routes in and out of Dundee city centre, focusing on the Arbroath and Lochee Road corridors. The project involves improvements at 26 bus stops along the A90 at Ethie Beaton, East Haven and the A930 Barry Bypass, and includes upgrading shelters, display board infrastructures and associated works. Third book released. An Angus author has published a new book in her series chronicling the adventures of Scarecrow, Harry Also. Harry Also Joins the Circus is the third in the Tales of Harry Also series, which offers young readers a unique blend of fantasy and realism, grounded in the beautiful Scottish landscape. The stories explore the different avenues with which everyone is confronted in life and righting some wrongs along the way. Celia Norman Smith studied at Brighton Art College for a BA Honours Art and Design. After working at Mount Cook Sheep Station, New Zealand, she retrained as a shepherd. Living off the land in Scotland also created a passion for writing and drawing. The natural environments and community care of different cultures influenced her life. Now living in Angus, Scotland, she loves wild gardening and wild swimming. Police patrols stepped up. Police patrols are to be stepped up in parts of Monifieth following complaints of antisocial behaviour by local youths. Focusing mainly on the South Street area, the most recent incident happened at around 8:45 p.m. on Tuesday, October the 14th, where a resident's door was kicked by several youths. Officers from the Carnoustie, Monifieth and Sidlaws Community Policing Team are now looking for help to identify a group of seven males aged around 14. One is described as wearing a black hoodie with the word represent on the front. Constable Ronnie Irvin said the incident had left residents very shaken. Anyone with information should contact Police Scotland on 101. Time to act on damp and mould in our homes. A national campaign aimed at tackling the scourge of damp and mould in people's homes has received formal recognition from the UK and Scottish governments. Governments have joined housing professionals, leading academics and charities in commending the second Damp and Mould Action and Awareness Week, which runs from October the 20th to 26th. The event, coordinated by Home Life Safety Specialists, ACO, has added urgency this year with the introduction of AWOB's law from October the 27th. This will legally require social landlords to investigate and remedy damp and mould within strict timeframes. The law is named after 2-year-old AWOB Ishak, who tragically died as a result of prolonged exposure to mould in his Rochdale home. Housing Secretary Mary McAllen said, "This means we will implement AWOB's law in Scotland, which will ensure no one has to live in a tenanted property affected by damp and mould. We all want to ensure that tenants are living in homes that are safe, warm, and are not detrimental to their health, and I wish a successful event. Support for the campaign has also been pledged from the Chartered Institute of Housing, Scotland's Housing Network, Healthy Homes Hub, and Allergy UK. ACO has written directly to MPs across the UK, urging them to show their support and raise awareness in their constituencies. Ploughing On campaign salutes veteran farmers. An initiative to celebrate the huge contribution of older people in Scottish agriculture has been launched this week. The Royal Scottish Agricultural Benevolent Institution is behind the Plough On campaign. It aims to raise awareness of the remarkable service and dedication of senior people in farming and crofting, and remind older people in agricultural communities just how valued they are. The campaign, which is being backed by organisations throughout Scottish agriculture, has been developed at a time when many older farmers are reporting feeling particularly anxious about the future, including the impact of proposed inheritance tax changes. Running throughout the winter months, the aim is to highlight the commitment shown by the men and women who have dedicated their lives to agriculture, sharing memories of the highs and lows across many decades. In the coming weeks, RSABI will call for volunteers to arrange festive lunches for senior people and to develop a network of Plough On groups across the country. RSABI will also be releasing a series of videos highlighting the contributions made by farming folk who have dedicated their lives to working on the land, sharing their love of farming to inspire younger people. There will also be an opportunity to nominate senior people to receive an official certificate from RSABI to recognise those who have given exceptional contributions through long service in farming and crofting. Health app to launch in December. MyCare.Scot, Scotland's new health and social care online app, will be made available to everyone across Scotland from April 2026, following an initial launch in Lanarkshire in December. The new online service will transform how people access and interact with health and social care services. Users will be provided with a secure digital identity, access to some personal information, and the National Service Finder from NHS Inform. The initial launch will be targeted at dermatology outpatients. It will be evaluated thoroughly, with the app's development reflecting user feedback and experience, before being rolled out progressively across Scotland from April. Following initial rollout, MyCare will be expanded to hospital-based services before including other areas of the health and social care system, including GP practices, pharmacy, social work and social care. Honorary MBE for Children's Charity Trustee. Dr. Grant Rodney, a trustee of the children's charity The Archie Foundation, has been awarded an Honorary Member of the Order of the British Empire, MBE, for contributions to children's surgical and anaesthesia services. Dr. Rodney, who joined the Archie Foundation's board as a trustee in March 2025, following his retirement from Dundee's Ninewells Hospital in 2024, has spent more than two decades leading children's anaesthesia and surgical services in Tayside. During his 29 years with NHS Tayside as a consultant anaesthetist, Dr. Rodney was instrumental in the charity's expansion into the region and the creation of a purpose-built twin theatre operating suite at Tayside's Children's Hospital. The £12 million project, which was completed in 2022, includes two state-of-the-art operating theatres, a 10-bed ward, sensory room, modern admission spaces and child-friendly design features, all implemented to reduce stress for parents and families visiting the hospital. For the development of the twin theatre operating suite, Foundation raised £2 million thanks to local and corporate support and fundraising initiatives like the Oor Woolley Bucket Trail. Dr. Rodney expressed his gratitude but emphasised that the honour reflects a collective achievement rather than individual effort. Peter departs after getting job at Don's. Peter Davidson has stepped down as a director at Montrose after being appointed as chief executive of Aberdeen FC Community Trust. Davidson joined the board in November 2016 while serving as chief executive of Montrose Community Trust. Over the past 10 seasons, he has played a pivotal role in the club's continued success, leaving a legacy of progress, inclusion, and community impact. During his tenure, Davidson helped unify all levels of football in the town, establishing a clear pathway for players of all ages, abilities, and aspirations. His support was instrumental in the formation of Montrose's first adult women's team, now competing at the highest level of the Scottish women's game. Davidson also championed youth development, strengthening the connection between the first team and the club's academy, and laying foundations for long-term success. Under his leadership, Montrose Community Trust became one of the most respected charities in Scottish football, delivering transformative programmes in health, well-being and education.
Hi, my name is Muriel and I'm reading from Angus County Press, dated the 30th of October. Local MP Stephen Gethins has celebrated the 25th anniversary of one of our Bro's best-loved independent businesses by presenting the team with an early demotion, EDM, he tabled in Parliament to mark the milestone. Smithy's Delicatessen and Gin Emporium on Kepti Street has been serving the people of Arbroath and visitors from further afield since 2000, building a reputation for its warm welcome, high-quality local produce, an exceptional range of craft gins. Over the past quarter of a century, it has become a cornerstone of the community and a proud supporter of local farmers, food producers and distillers. Mr. Gessen said, reaching 25 years in business is a tremendous achievement and a testament to the dedication, passion and hard work of the Smithies team. They've created something truly special, not just a shop, but a community hub that champions the best of our growth and Angus produce. Small businesses like Smithies are the backbone of our local economy. I wanted to ensure their contribution was recognised formally in Parliament, so I was delighted to table an early demotion celebrating this milestone and to present it personally to the team. The early demotion table in the House of Commons congratulates Smithies Delicatessen and Gin Emporium on its 25th anniversary and recognises its continued commitment to supporting local producers and enriching the community in Arbroath. He added, it's important that we don't take businesses like Smithies for granted. A Brechin building firm is bucking the national trend of skills shortages and an ageing workforce, with one of the youngest in the sector. As Scotland's construction sector faces mounting pressure from skills shortages and an ageing workforce, one company is proving that the future is already here. Forster Group, Scotland's leading provider of integrated roofing, solar and battery storage solutions, has revealed its workforce has an average age of 34, dropping further to 30 in its roofing division. Figures drawn from internal research contrast sharply with national trends, showing over one-third of construction workers are age 50. By investing in training, development and clear career pathways through its Forster Skills Academy, established in 2015, Forster Group is successfully bucking the trend, attracting, training and retaining young talent at a time when much of the sector is struggling to do so. I've been with Forster Group for 7 years now and I've learnt a lot in that time, said Ryan O'Rourke, 26, a qualified roofer who joined the Skills Academy in 2018. I've had the chance to work on lots of different projects and I have been given lots of opportunities to develop my skills and learn more about the industry. Forster Group have been a great place for me to start my career. Alongside this long-term commitment to nurturing skills is a focus on providing genuine career progression. Every Forster apprentice receives expert training in solar PVC installation, building skills that sustain both Scotland's net zero goals and a resilient, future-ready workforce. The Academy has supported over 100 new entrants through accredited programmes, achieving a 95% apprenticeship completion rate, well above the industry average. John Forster, company founder and chairman, said, "We've built a team that's young, skilled and ready to deliver in a sector facing real challenges. Our workforce is a signal of what's possible when you invest in people and plan for the future." The company's approach is already paying dividends for householders. With over 35 years of experience, Forster Group offers certainty on capacity, quality and reliability backed by a stable, highly skilled team. Mr. Forster added, "When house builders choose Forster, they're choosing a partner that's ready to deliver. We provide the confidence that every roof will be completed on time and to the highest standards, with the next generation of talent leading the way." Lindsay Kemp, Skills Academy trainer, said, "We are proud to be part of the solution, not just to the skills gap, but to the housing and energy challenges Scotland faces. Our young team is building homes, building careers and building a better, healthier future for themselves and their families." As the Construction Industry Training Board, CITB, forecasts a need for 47,860 additional workers annually from 2025 to 2029, Forster Group's success offers a clear message to industry and policymakers alike. The next generation is ready if the sector is willing to invest. Eric Summers, historian and retired head of Webster's High School in Kirriemuir, delighted members of Forfar Probus with three tales of Orkney. "It's an area of Scotland," he admitted, "falling in love with since 1975. His talk was brilliantly illustrated with archive material and photographs taken on his many trips to the islands with his wife and fellow historian Alison. The first tale was the loss of HMS Hampshire on June the 5th, 1916. She was sailing to Arkhangelsk, Russia, carrying Field Marshal Lord Kitchener when she struck a mine laid by German submarines 2 miles off the Bursey coast and sank with 737 of 749 people aboard killed, including the Secretary of State for War and his staff. The second tale was the daring torpedo attack by German submarine U-47, commanded by Günther Prien on the battleship Royal Oak, anchored in Scapa Flow on October the 14th, 1939, and the loss of 835 men and boys when the ship went down. The third tale was the backstory of the Covenanters' memorial at Dearness, marking the tragedy of 1679, when the Crown of London, carrying 257 prisoners deported as slaves to the United States colonies, was wrecked on rocks during a fierce storm. About 50 prisoners did manage to escape, along with the captain and crew, but 200 of the Covenanters drowned while still imprisoned below deck. Questions were asked from the floor and members showed their appreciation when thanks were proposed by Brian Ogilvie. Proposals for a major industrial development at Montrose Port have been lodged with Angus Council. The Port Authority wants to develop a 45-acre site at Forties Road, which it acquired last year. The area was formerly Petrofac Fire Safety Training Facility. At the time, it said the purchase was to further its ambitions to be one of Scotland's key offshore energy hubs. It is thought the land could be used by companies connected to the offshore wind supply chain. It is also possible that existing firms at Montrose Port could move to the new premises, freeing up land to accommodate its expanding offshore work. The application lodged by Crawford Architecture requests the erection of warehousing, offices, business units, new entrance roundabout and associated works across 26 acres of the site. It is being classed as a major industrial development, which requires statutory pre-application consultation. A recent trip to a museum reunited one Forfar care home resident with a find he made on a Fife beach almost 50 years ago. Residents from Benham Care Home recently enjoyed a day out at McManus Art Gallery and Museum in Dundee. After exploring the natural history section, while most residents sat down for a cup of tea, Richard continued viewing with the home's well-being lead. While viewing the exhibits, he saw a medieval boat paddle which he found on Tensmuir Beach in 1977. He related how, after spotting the paddle on the beach, he carefully dug it up, took it home and soaked it in a basin before taking it to the museum. Historians dated the paddle between 1340 and 1480, and it now sits in the medieval collection, complete with a label crediting Richard. A spokesperson for the home said, discovering that Richard had quietly contributed a piece of history to the museum nearly 50 years ago shows why getting out into our local communities matters so much. Seeing familiar places and objects brings back stories that might otherwise stay untold. Richard might never have mentioned the paddle if he hadn't seen it again in the museum. It's a reminder that our residents have lived full, rich lives with countless stories still waiting to be told. Being able to share the memory with his friends, showing them something he'd found with his name beside it, was a proud moment that we are grateful to have been part of. A group of local children swapped the classroom for the football pitch as they took part in a special coaching session at Gayfield, led by our Broth co-manager David Gold. The event took place during the October school holidays to mark the official launch of Coaching with Stagecoach. This is a new community partnership between Stagecoach and the club, aimed at encouraging youngsters to stay active, connected and inspired by their hometown heroes. The pupils posed in front of a zero-emissions Stagecoach electric bus, highlighting how families can make greener journeys across the region before taking part in a fun coaching session led by Gold. He said, "This is a brilliant initiative that brings together two organisations at the heart of our town. Football has such a positive influence on young people and we are proud to work with Stagecoach to help inspire our Broth's next generation, both on and off the pitch." Sam McWalter, Engineering Director for Stagecoach East Scotland, is a lifelong Arbroath supporter. He has worked for the bus operator for 23 years and also watched his uncle Mark and cousin Kieran both play for the club. McWalter added, "I played on this pitch as a schoolboy, so it's really special to see children enjoy the same experience. It is something they'll always remember. Arbroath FC is such a visible part of the community, and we are delighted to be joining forces through this partnership to support local children's health and well-being. The Coaching with Stagecoach initiative will continue throughout the school year, with more children invited to take part in upcoming sessions. Away from Gayfield, things didn't go quite so well, as Arbroath lost 1-0 at Airdrie Onions on Saturday the 25th of October. The visitors were aiming to build on their win over championship leader St Johnston the week before. However, the North Lanarkshire side grabbed their first league win of the season with a Ewan Henderson penalty after 14 minutes, enough to split the sides. This saw Arbroath slip back to fourth in the table as they prepare to host Ross County on Saturday, 1st of November. On 25th of October, Brechin City and Forfar Athletic got through tricky ties against lower league opposition to reach the third round of the Scottish Cup. Both were up against teams from the EOS Premier Division, as City won 3-1 at home to Dundonald Bluebell, while Forfar won 2-1 away to Musselburgh Athletic. It remained goalless until half-time at a windy Glebe Park, with City finally making the breakthrough 7 minutes into the second period. A long ball out of defence released Mitch Taylor down the left to put in a low cross. Spencer Moreland looked to have been barged, but the ball ran kindly for Fraser McLeod to slot home. Their advantage was doubled 7 minutes later when McLeod turned provider with a through ball for Mitchell Findlay to run clear and beat Scott Costello. The tie was sealed on 76 minutes as McLeod poked the ball through to Grady McGrath and he drilled into the net from the edge of the area. Bluebell pulled one back 3 minutes later when Lewis McKenzie nodded in from a Jack Wilson cross. Forfar would find themselves behind a minute before the break as a high aimless ball was dropped by keeper Mark McCallum and Jamie Todd poked the ball over the line. It was a special day for Forfar skipper Stuart Morrison as he made his 100th appearance and he grabbed the equaliser a minute into the second period when a corner bobbled around in the box and he turned the ball home. Both sides would hit the woodwork before the winner arrived 3 minutes from time. Craig Slater curling a free kick into the top corner from the left side of the box. City and Forfar are joined in the third round by Montrose and Arbroath as the League One and Championship sides enter the competition. The reward for City is a trip to Kelty Hearts, while Forfar hosts Partick's Thistle. Arbroath travel to face East Fife, while Montrose are at WOS First Division outfit Benburb. It is back to league action on Saturday the 1st of November as City head to Nairn County, who have quietly won 5 out of the last 6 in the Highland League. Forfar are also away at Stranraer, who would be bottom of League 2 were it not for Edinburgh City's points deduction. This article is from Dundee Courier, dated the 23rd of October. Brechin City Football Club have paid tribute to fan Kim Patterson, who has died after being diagnosed with terminal cancer. The Angus club announced that Kim, 40, passed away on Wednesday the 22nd of October. She was the secretary for the Brechin City Supporters Club and regularly shared images of her artwork on X. Brechin City issue a heartfelt tribute to Kim. It read, "Everyone at Brechin City Football Club are devastated to learn of the passing of Supporters Club Secretary Kim Patterson. We would like to pass on our sincere condolences and love to the family at this incredibly sad time. Kim was well known on X for her views on Scottish football. She spent 7 years as a committee member of City Supporters Club and also served as the club shop manager. The club also paid their respects on social media. Their statement read, "With the permission of the Patterson family, we unfortunately have to share the devastating news that our club secretary Kim has passed away. Kim was a devoted City fan who could always be found in the club shop during game days serving all the customers. Where possible, Kim enjoyed an away day with her fellow fans and maybe a few too many rums. We send our heartfelt condolences to Jake, Shirley, Ella and Adam. Till next time, Kim." Kim shared a 6-year-old daughter, Ella, with Adam McPhail. Adam has been raising money for Macmillan Cancer Support by taking part in their Sober October Challenge. An ex-post shared by forum site Pie and Bovril asked fellow football fans for donations. Adam said, "It's been lovely to see the Scottish football community as well as friends and family be so touched by her story to donate so generously." As of 3 p.m. on Thursday the 23rd of October, Adam had raised nearly £2,100 for the charity.
Hello, my name is Irene and I'm reading from the Angus County Press, dated Thursday, November 6th, 2025. Overhead line gains consent. Approval has been granted for the reconductoring of an overhead transmission line between Angus and Fife. SSEN Transmission has been granted Section 37 consent by Scottish Ministers for its Teeling to Westfield project involving the uprating of 37 kilometres of an existing transmission line. Consent came just days after an application for another section of overhead power line stretching 70 miles from Kintore in Aberdeenshire to Teeling attracted over 10,000 objections. It also follows the recent consent for the 14-kilometre Aileth to Teeling reconductoring project announced last month, with SSEN Transmission saying this reinforces momentum behind its pathway to 2030 investment programme. The Teeling to Westfield project will involve uprating the existing 275 kV transmission line to operate at 400 kV, significantly increasing capacity to support the continued growth of low-carbon electricity generation. The reconductoring works will involve replacing overhead conductors, insulators and fittings along the existing towers in the route, with a single tower potentially replaced. Foundation and steel structure reinforcements will also be carried out to ensure long-term resilience. The main construction work is expected to begin in 2026. Gregor Sturton, project manager at SSEN Transmission, said, "We are pleased to receive consent for the Teeling to Westfield overhead line upgrade, a vital infrastructure project that will help deliver Scotland's clean energy ambitions and enhance national energy security. This approval builds on the recent Aileth to Teeling consent and reflects the importance of our Pathway to 2030 programme in unlocking Scotland's clean power potential. As with our other projects, we are committed to delivering meaningful benefits to local communities, including substantial community benefit funding and supply chain opportunities. We are grateful to all stakeholders who engaged with us throughout the consultation process and look forward to working closely with communities as we move into the delivery phase. Local contractors have been engaged to help deliver the development and refinement phases of the project. Further opportunities for local businesses are anticipated, with principal contractor Balfour Beatty intending to invite local suppliers to tender to help deliver the construction phase of the project. The Teeling Westfield project is also expected to generate £7.4 million in community benefit funding, with more details to follow in the coming months on local consultation and how this will be made available. The Airlift Tailing upgrade is expected to generate £2.8 million of community benefit funding. SSEN Transmission says these projects are part of a wider upgrade of transmission projects to modernise the electricity transmission infrastructure across the north of Scotland, enhancing capacity to deliver clean energy nationwide and supporting both Scottish and UK energy security and clean power goals. The Tailing to Westfield Reconducting project is part of the wider commitment to invest at least £22 billion in the coming years to upgrade Scotland's electricity infrastructure. This investment will support the UK's net zero targets and create thousands of skilled jobs and other local community benefits. Licence is again refused for XL Bully Sanctuary. The latest attempt to establish Scotland's first XL Bully Sanctuary has failed as Angus councillors refused to grant a licence. The All Bully Rescue Centre has been looking to secure permission for the sanctuary to open at the Hapus Canine Centre near Forfar. Charity figurehead Kerry-Anne Shaw moved to Angus from Glasgow in 2024 to set up the facility. Angus councillors previously rejected the charity's application for an animal welfare licence in February. The charity had been due to contest the licence refusal at Forfar Sheriff Court in August. However, that appeal was withdrawn to allow for a new licence application to be submitted for the council's consideration. A fresh application went before the Civil Licensing Committee last Thursday, October the 30th. Councillors heard that a recent inspection carried out by the local authority's animal welfare inspector again highlighted a series of failings at the premises. Concerns were raised in the inspection report regarding the facility's extremely dirty kitchen and a strong smell of faeces upon entering the kennel's reception area. The ratio of staffing levels to the animals housed at the facility was also raised as a concern. During Thursday's council meeting, Ms Shaw's legal representative, Jacob Cohen, asked committee members to allow a four-month deferral to address the issues raised. This would include the renovation of the reception area, partitioning the kitchen into separate spaces for human and animal use, as well as hiring a cleaner for the facility. A further paid member of staff would also be sought to help Ms Shaw, and a new system to delegate administrative and record-keeping work would be developed. However, despite these pleas, the application was refused by the committee. Councillors expressed concerns over whether the required improvements could be made. Councillor Beth Whiteside said, "Reluctantly, I don't think we can be satisfied that the conditions are likely to be met. I think there is an awful lot of work needing to be done. I don't think we have any other option but to refuse." Councillor Linda Clark added, "It's sad, but I would have to say the same. I don't see what else I can do because there is nothing today that comforts me." Councillor leader George Meehan put forward an amendment seeking to grant the requested four-month deferral of the decision, but he failed to get the backing of fellow councillors. Warm meals for the over 60s. Asda are bringing back the popular cafe Winter Warmer Pound Meal Deal to support the over 60s this winter as they continue to face increased financial pressures during the colder months. Last year, 500,000 pound meals were served to pensioners. Until the end of February, Asda are offering people aged 60 and over the chance to enjoy soup, bread and unlimited tier coffee for just £1 in any of Asda's 212 cafes, including Forfar. Asda's community champions are also inviting local over 60s groups and individuals to come along to use the pound winter warmer meal as an opportunity to meet and chat to others. Last year, Asda's Christmas Community Tracker laid bare the lack of human interaction and conversations millions of older people suffer in the run-up and during the festive period, with 1 in 10 not sure they will speak to anyone between December 15th and January 1st. And 1 in 10 over 60 said they'd gone to a supermarket simply to speak to another person. Jordan Cummings, buying manager, cafes and concessions at Asda, said, "We know winter is set to be incredibly hard for thousands of pensioners as they continue to worry about how to keep themselves warm in the face of rising living costs and on a fixed income. Last year alone, we sold over 500,000 meals, showing the vital need for this initiative. By bringing winter warmers back this November, we hope it will continue to be just as impactful across the winter months for those who need it most." New £322,000 lifeboat is a tribute to June. A brand new Atlantic 85 lifeboat has arrived in Arbroath, immediately entering operational service. The £322,000 life-saving vessel was built in-house by the RNLI and travelled north to Scotland last Tuesday, October 28th, to its new home in Angus, marking the start of a new era of life-saving in the town. The new lifeboat has replaced an Atlantic 85 lifeboat from the RNLI's relief fleet that arrived in 2023. The boat entered operational service in 2024, and since then the volunteer crew have completed 27 rescue missions, rescuing 6 people and have saved 1 life. Now, the proud recipients of their own Atlantic 85 lifeboat, B954, June Marshall, is set to continue a vital life-saving service on the waters in and around Arbroath. The lifeboat has been funded by the legacy of June Marshall and is named after June in her honour. June Marshall lived in Surrey but had a very close relationship with the Arbroath Life Station. Every year June visited Arbroath, usually in September, and would pop in to catch up with the crew who meant so much to her. The order of service at June's funeral included a photograph of her wearing RNLI branded clothing. Arbroath RNLI volunteer Michael Marr joined the RNLI 17 years ago and fondly remembers the love and interest June had in Arbroath lifeboat station. Now helm aboard the Atlantic 85, Michael is delighted to welcome the new boat and looks forward to the future of life-saving aboard the vessel. Michael said, "We are extremely grateful and honoured to accept our new Atlantic 85 lifeboat in memory of June Marshall. June was such a keen supporter of the RNLI and, despite living at the opposite end of the country, had very close ties to Arbroath. As well as a regular visitor, she would call the lifeboat station on a Saturday after our weekly exercise to find out how we got on. It is a fitting privilege to carry June's memory with us as we enter the next chapter here in Arbroath." Area Operations Manager Henry Weaver was delighted to accept the Atlantic 85 lifeboat into the fleet and looks forward to the many years of service in Arbroath. "The Atlantic 85 is an incredible lifeboat and has demonstrated its worth since going on service in 2024, he said. "This is an exciting time for the volunteer crew in Arbroath, and as we look to recruit a volunteer lifeboat operations manager, we urge anyone available to give their time and service in what is a hugely rewarding role to do so and join the team as we continue to save lives at sea." Westminster View by Stephen Gethins, MP for Arbroath and Broughty Ferry. Honouring service, strengthening support. Each November, as we gather for Remembrance Across Angus, from the memorials in Arbroath and Carnoustie to the community services in Monifieth, Inverkiller and elsewhere, we are reminded of those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. The poppies, the silence and the solemn notes of the bugle carry not only memory but responsibility to stand by those who stood for us. That duty does not end when the parades disperse. For the veterans and families who call this part of Angus home, our thanks must be matched by tangible support. In an increasingly uncertain world, that commitment matters more than ever. Across Angus, I continue to be deeply impressed by the work of local organisations and volunteers who support our veterans day in and day out. The Royal British Legion Scotland branches in Arbroath and Carnoustie, for example, offer far more than remembrance. They provide spaces of belonging, practical help and camaraderie for those adjusting to civilian life. Local volunteers run community cafes, befriending groups and family events that ensure no one who served is ever left behind. That sense of community extends to those still serving and their loved ones. The Naval Families Federation, which represents Royal Navy and Royal Marines families, plays an important role in Angus and along our coast, providing guidance on housing, education and welfare, and ensuring that service families in towns like Arbroath and Monifieth are supported throughout deployments and transitions. Their work reminds us that the strength of our armed forces lies not only in those who serve, but in the families who are often left behind. That local compassion is matched by action from government. The Scottish Government's Scottish Veterans Fund has provided more than £2 million since its creation, with over £450,000 distributed this year alone to support veterans' mental health, employment and family well-being. Meanwhile, the National Veterans Strategy Action Plan 2024-25 continues to drive progress on housing, health care and employment, ensuring that no one who has served Scotland faces disadvantage as a result. Here in Angus, the Council's Welfare Rights Team plays an essential role, helping veterans and their families access financial, housing and benefit advice. The Angus Armed Forces and Veterans Community Covenant brings together local services, charities and public bodies to ensure joined-up support, recognising that behind every veteran there is often a family, a carer and a wider circle who also deserve our care. As we mark Remembrance Duty this year, let us do so with gratitude and resolve. Gratitude for the courage and sacrifice that secured our freedoms, and resolve to build a Scotland where every veteran and every family of those who serve can live with dignity, opportunity and support. In remembrance and in service, we stand together. Keeping stories alive to preserve SWI's history. A new 10-episode series has been launched, tracing the Scottish Women's Institute's history from its beginnings in 1917. Exploring how the organisation has evolved over the decades, SWI History Makers was produced and features SWI members as well as several special guests. Listeners can expect stories of cooking, crafts, friendship, heritage and the many ways the SWI connects women across generations and around the world. funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund as part of SWI's ongoing heritage project. It examines how one woman created Scotland's largest women's movement and how it continues to shape lives today. The SWI Heritage Project has been capturing the voices of rural Scottish women, preserving their memories and experiences. Its aim is to celebrate the enduring influence of the SWI on women's lives and communities, ensuring their stories are shared and cherished for generations to come. With support from members, academics, historians and volunteers, the project is now helping women's stories emerge, challenging preconceptions about women's roles over the past century. Diane Cooper, SWI Chief Executive, commented, "I'm thrilled for our members and the public to hear these inspiring stories from women across the Scottish Women's Institutes. Keeping these stories and memories alive plays an important role in preserving the SWI's place in history and the impact it has had on our members during its 108-year service. I hope that listeners feel inspired after making their way through all 10 episodes and consider joining an institute near them." The first three episodes are now available to view now at www.thesWI.org.uk/heritage/member-podcasts/, with further episodes being released every Monday until January the 5th. Investing in young people with Football Club Link Up. Rossi Young People's Trust is investing in young people's futures by launching a partnership with the women's team of Montrose Football Club. The collaboration aims to inspire, engage and provide opportunities for young people to develop skills both on and off the pitch. Rossi, which is home to a community of young people in care with complex needs, is sponsoring Forfar-born striker 23-year-old Niamh Guthrie and two matches, one which took place in October and one in December. The charity is also sponsoring the team's travelling kit. Further sponsorship has been agreed with the club in the form of advertising boards. Founded in 2016 as part of the Montrose Community Trust, Montrose FC Women, managed by Craig Farrows, has quickly become a rising force in Scottish women's football. After an unbeaten run to claim the SWFL Championship North title in 2022, the team earned promotion to SWPL 2. The following season saw Montrose crowned SWPL 2 champions, securing their first ever place in the top flight, SWPL 1. In the 2025-26 season, Montrose competes at the highest level, facing Scotland's elite. The squad of around 20 players continues to grow, blending experienced talent with emerging youth, all while maintaining strong ties to the local community. Barry O'Neill, Director of Football Montrose FC Women, said, "We are delighted to have Rossi on board as one of our partners. Niamh and I spent some time with Kevin and the team at Rossi to see the facilities and hear about the work that they do. We are both inspired by the lengths they go to in order to improve the lives and future life chances of the children they work with. Rossi is keen to foster better links with the local community to help get their amazing story in the public domain, and we are very happy to help shine a light on this vitally important work." Rossi, with a history spanning more than 160 years, is home to a community of young people aged up to 18 from across the UK who have a range of complex needs. Employing over 200 staff, the charity is the second largest employer in the Montrose area and works closely with the local community to provide bespoke education, specialist support and welfare for the young people in its care. Set within 150 acres of grounds, Rossi also places great emphasis on the benefits of fresh air, physical activity and exercise. Chief Executive Kevin Northcutt said, "At Rossi, we support our young people to achieve the best possible outcomes in life, equipping them with the skills they need to take positive next steps after their time with us and providing an environment that supports their growth and development. Every day we see the positive impact that fresh air and exercise have on well-being, and football in particular is hugely popular within our community. This partnership also supports our goal of fostering talent and ambition, raising aspirations and celebrating effort. Montrose FC women have shown what can be achieved through determination and belief, values that strongly align with our own. When our young people see the achievements of players like Neve, it broadens their horizons and helps them envision new possibilities for their own futures. By connecting with the wider community, they gain new opportunities, new perspectives, and a sense of belonging, realising that we are all part of something bigger than ourselves. For more information, visit www.rossi.org.uk. Marjorie's talk on life without sight. Forfar Probus Club welcomed Marjorie Hughes and Charlie to their latest meeting, where she gave a talk on life without sight. Marjorie told the club how she has negotiated life being totally blind since birth. She told of her early life at home and boarding school with one-to-one tuition in reading and writing Braille, but longing to get back to her family at weekends. She admitted being a tomboy, climbing trees and landing in trouble at home and school. Having passed her O grades, Marjorie wanted to be a physiotherapist, but was refused and completed a secretarial course in Edinburgh before working at guide dog centres across the country, latterly in Forfar. Freedom of movement, independence and a new lease of life opened up for her in 1981 when she was given her first guide dog. This allowed her to roam in the country, delighting in the sounds, smells and touch that developed her positive attitude, always wanting to try something new, like horse riding, flying in a glider, and on her exciting safari in Africa, getting to touch a tame lion, an elephant and a cheetah, and listening to and feeling the spray of Victoria Falls. She distributed some large Braille volumes for inspection by Probus Club members and finished with a beautiful Scots song illustrating her love of all things musical. Members were totally inspired by her talk and asked many questions on a wide range of issues: the dangers of cooking, navigating traffic, the embarrassment of sighted helpers, etc. Thanks were proposed by Bob Kidd.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Simon Martin. A few years ago, not that long after the UK voted to leave the European Union, a friend and I explored the cycle trails in Derbyshire. Here's a description of one of the things we found on our journeys. The Tissington Trail in the Peak District runs 16 miles from Ashbourne in the south to a few miles short of Buxton in the north. Originally, it was the London and North Western Railway line between Ashbourne and Buxton, transporting milk to London and limestone from the local quarries to the industrial areas which surround the peaks. The route was one of the last of the Victorian railways. It opened in 1899 and closed around 70 years later. The Peak District National Park bought the line in 1971, and now it's a dedicated route for walkers, cyclists and horse riders. Towards the northern end of the trail is the site of the old Parsley Hay station. It's now a cycle hire centre and refreshment kiosk for users of the route. I browse around the cycle hire shop. They have tandems, trailers and all sorts of specially adapted bikes for people with mobility difficulties. A young woman is grinning widely as her seatbelt is fastened securely and her able-bodied companion steers them both onto the trail. They head off towards the south. My destination is a short distance in the opposite direction. I walk in warm June sunshine looking out over the rolling hills of the White Peak. The farmland is well maintained, the fields edged with dry limestone walls. Over to my left in the middle distance, a small, old tractor is towing a tedder. The rotary tines are turning the hay, which will dry quickly in this weather and with a gentle breeze. A great day for haymaking and a great day for a walk. In only a few hundred yards, there it is, the building I've come to see. I'd noticed it before on a cycle journey and wanted to come back for another look. Like the field boundaries, it's built of dry stone. It's a simple, small round house with a conical corbelled stone roof. I pace it out. It's about 5 meters in diameter and probably almost as tall. It's stone roof like a big conical hat. It almost looks as though it belongs in a storybook. The doorway has a simple rectangular opening and there are two square window openings, one looking up the trail, the other down. I read the information board nearby. The roundhouse is a Croatian kajun. It was built in 2013 as a gift to the people of the United Kingdom from the people of Croatia to commemorate the accession of Croatia to the European Union. The project was accomplished by Croatian dry stone wallers and overseen by Nenad Bečanić, Professor of Civil Engineering at the University of Glasgow. I pause for a moment to consider the irony of the fact that we've chosen to leave the EU, but we still have the kajun, built on English soil by Croatian artisans. I learn that kajuni are simple stone shelters for farm workers and their animals in the limestone countryside of Istria. Similar structures are found all over the Mediterranean and northwest Europe, though it's in Istria that they are especially being restored as an important part of their culture. I duck my head and walk into the kajun. It's cool inside, and there's a simple bench seat around the edge. I sit for a while and gaze up at the overlapping stones creating the ceiling, the inside of the domed roof. The walls must be nearly half a meter thick, so not much light comes in through the small windows, rather more through the doorway. The stones are roughly dressed and very neatly positioned together, their skilled chisel marks clearly visible. I feel cradled somehow and can sense how grateful I would be to those Croatian dry stone wallers if the weather had been adverse and if I was out, miles from home. It's a very calm and restful place. They built the structure near to Parsley Hay because of the limestone wall traditions of the White Peak area, and it's there for the use of walkers, cyclists and equestrians who frequent the Tissington Trail. Back outside, in the bright sunlight, I stop and read an oval plaque on the outside of the roundhouse. In loving memory, Professor Nenad Bečanić, 1945-2016. This kajun is a monument to Nenad's love of the UK and Croatia, both of which he called home. He would love nothing more than for travellers to rest a little here, or take shelter from the storm. I hope to walk or ride the Tissington Trail again before too long, and I'll be sure to pay my respects to Professor Bečanić and enjoy a few moments of peace and calm in his beautifully crafted, somehow timeless, simple stone shelter.
TNS Soundings.